Okay, today is the 7th of February 2019. It is the second of Adar Aleph Tafshin Ayin Tes. We are up to Halacha Day of Perek Yud Zayin of Sefer Bamidbar and Parshas Korach, and we have an important pasuk here. An important mitzvah that we're going to talk about. So, Perek Yud Zayin Pasuk Dalet. Elazar took the pans, Asher Kuvas Rufim, which they tried burning things in, Vayikarum Tzipoy L'Mizbeach, and then he banged them into the walls of the Mizbeach. So, why did he do that? So, it says the Pasuk Hei, Zikaron Livnei Yisrael, as a remembrance to B'nai Yisrael, Laman. Asher lo yikrov ish zar, asher lo mizer Aaron, that it should not be brought by a non-Kohen that is not from Aaron, latir ketoros of Hashem, in order to bring ketoros in front of Hashem. Okay, and then the pasuk says, v'lo yech korach v'chadaso, and he should not be like Korach and like his congregation. Kasher diber Hashem biad Moshe, as Hashem spoke to Moshe, as Hashem said, to the hands of Moshe to him. Okay, so with this pasuk, so right in the middle there is this phrase that one should not be like Korach and like his Eidah. So what does that come to tell us? So there is a Gemara Maseches Sanhedrin Daf Kuf Yud Amud Aleph where it says V'yakam Moshe V'yelchal Dasan V'Aviram. This is from the last parak, and Moshe got up and visited Dasan and Avir. Amar Reish Lakish Mikan She'im Achzikin B'Machlokas. From here we learn that a person should not persist in Machlokas, should not persist in arguments. The Amar Rav, as Rav said, Kol Masik B'Machlokas over belaf. Whoever persists in a machlokes violates a prohibition. Shneemar v'lo yeh kechorach v'cha adaso. That the pasuk tells us that one should not be like Korach and like his minions, and like his assembly. So, what does this gemara seem to be saying? That based on this pasuk in our parak, there is a isur d'oraisa to continue on in machlokes. Now, what are the parameters of that? What exactly is included in that? And is this actually an isur d'oraisa? So, we're going to get to all of that shortly. But what is it? I mean, it sounds like from this, just reading the gemara without actually looking at the context of the psukim of the verses, what does it sound like? It sounds like when there's a prohibition to persist in machlokes, and what does that include? That if you have an ability to go to somebody and solve the machlokas, and you don't, you're in violation of the Isser D'Oraisa. You're in violation of the biblical prohibition of being like Korach and his minions. That's what it sounds like from this Gemara. So then the Gemara continues, Rav Ashi Amar, Roy Litzareya. That you would actually get saras, as it says, "Ksiv hacha biyad Moshe lo," because they have this odd end of the pasuk where it says that Hashem spoke by the hand of Moshe about him. It's a little odd. Usually, it says as Hashem said to Moshe. What is this by this hand of Moshe? So it says over there in the beginning of Shmos where Moshe gavayomar Hashem lo od havina yadcha b'chekecha. Bring your hand into your bosom. Right? What was that? What was that story? That was when Hashem was trying to get Moshe to go back to Mitzrayim at the burning bush, and he tells him to put your hand in, and it came out and it was saras. You see, aha, there the word yadcha is used, here the word yad is used in a strange way, so it's coming to tell us that if one violates this, and one is like Korach and his people, he is actually going to get saras. Okay, that is what the Gemara tells us in the Maseches Sanhedrin. So there is a discussion of, okay, so does that mean that this is an Isser D'Oraisa? Is that one of the 613 mitzvahs that is included in this? So this, it is not. Well, at least, there are those that do count it. There is the Rabbeinu Yonah, there is the Bahag, and there is a line in the beginning of the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim in his Laws of Lashon Hara. So he lists off one violates Lashon Hara, you violated all of these Isser Aseis, and you violated all these Mitzvahs Los Aseis, all these violations. So number 12 of the Los Aseis, which you violate is, V'hu Maksik Ma'achlokas Ha'idesi Pura, if you are strengthening machlokas by you saying the lashon hara over od alav lo yech korach v'chadasa. You also, besides all the prohibitions of lashon hara you're violating, you also violate the prohibition of not to be like Korach and his minions. Shehu azhar shelo lahasik machlokas, which is a warning not to be like machlokas, as you learn in Sanhedrin daf kuf yud. Now, does the Mishnah Berurah really believe whenever all these things are really issur d'oraisa? It's unclear. Although he's in the footnote in the Bir Mayim Chaim, he's quoting this from the Smag, Rabbi Yon, who definitely seemed to assume that this was an Isser D'Oraisa, a biblical prohibition, which would even extend to, it sounds like, the requirement to positively seek the resolution of disputes, not just simply to avoid your own escalation of disputes, if one just learns the simple Gemara. However, as regards to what the status of this is, it does enter into an interesting discussion that appears in the Sefer HaMitzvos of the Rambam. Actually, there's a little note about the Rambam. The Rambam encountered Richard the Lionheart at some point. I'm figuring this out. This is on the headlines here of David Cohn in his presentation. Just mentioned something about the Rambam, and he mentioned that the Rambam at some point encountered Richard the Lionheart. Richard the Lionheart invited him to come back to England with him, and he refused and said, "I'm going to stay here." But if he would have gone back to England, his Perush HaMishnayos, his commentary on the Mishnah, which was written in Arabic in the vernacular, would have been written in Old English instead. Figuring out what that story is all about. But anyways, the Rambam in his Sefer HaMitzvos, which then became the basis for the Yad HaChazaka, right, when you buy the 14 Yad HaChazakas, there's also the Sefer HaMitzvos come before, where he lists all the positive mitzvahs and all the negative mitzvahs. It comes out to 613. But beyond that, in the beginning, he wrote an introduction, what the rules are. He set out what are the rules of what is included in a mitzvah and what is not going to be included in a mitzvah. So Shoresh Shmini, the eighth rule that he has is Shein Roy Lindos Shalilos Hachiyuv Im Hazara, that we are not going to count the Shalilos. What are Shalilos? Shaliloses? What is that referring to? So it's referring to when the Gemara seems to, when the Torah says not to do something, but not in the form of a mitzvah. It's like, and don't do that. Like, or a recommendation not to do something. So, right off the bat, to give any examples here. Right. So, for instance, if it says eat specific things and don't eat other things, so that's not going to be an additional mitzvah d'oraisa. That's what it sounds like. Or don't eat this and you'll become fat. So it's not that there's a prohibition to become fat. It's just mentioning, although maybe there is, but it's just mentioning that's just going to be the effect. That's going to be the repercussions of something. So that's not going to be counted as a mitzvah. That's the Shoresh Shmini, the eighth one. So over the course of his discussion there, the Rambam then says, V'chim amru v'lo yek echorav echada so hu shalila. That an example of this is our pasuk, that not one should not be like Korach is this. So come and explain what's going on here. Shu shalila v'hu shalila, why? U pershu inyano v'amru. They explain it and say, Shu yis'ala siper lanu shekol mi shiachluk ala kahuna v'yoraba lo yachol bo ma shehagia kechorach v'chada so min habliya v'hasrifa. Aval amnam ye anshu kasher diber Hashem b'yad Moshe. It's saying that you're not going, if you continue and persist in these disputes that Korach engaged in, you negate the kahuna, you negate Moshe, you raise those kinds of issues, you're not going to be punished in the way that Korach did. Rather, how are you going to be punished? You're going to be punished with tzaras. You're going to be punished with retzalomah hatzaras. Who amru yisbara? And that's what it means. And he quotes this pasuk. Being arayim meshakar v'uziyah melech Yehuda. And even though we find in Sanhedrin that it says kol masik machlokas over below tas, say you violate a prohibition, as it says v'lo yikech karav v'chada, so it just quotes that snippet of the verse and says you shouldn't be like Korach. V'ze al tzad ha'asmachta. Lo yishiyesh pashid ekra b'chavana. That's just an asmachta. What is an asmachta? That's the secret words you have to say in order to get out of a pasuk in the Torah being completely counted as one of the 613 mitzvah. Okay, what does it mean? That it's like a hint. It's like advice from the pasuk. I'm not sure what the best translation of an asmachta is, but it's not a commandment in the same way that the other 613 mitzvahs are. So, yes, the Gemara seems to imply that, but the Gemara is only really quoting an asmachta, it's quote, not quoting an iser. Rather, what is it telling us? That if one does this, you will not be like Korach. What does it mean you won't be like Korach? It's not a commandment not to be like Korach. It's just a fact that you won't be like Korach. You won't be like Korach and suffer the repercussions that Korach suffered. Rather, you're going to suffer something else. What is that something else that you're going to suffer? You're going to suffer tzaras. Why tzaras? So tzaras, machlokas fits into the Lashon Hara category. We're going to put you into the Lashon Hara category. Okay? That is what the Rambam writes in the Sefer HaMitzvah. So along the margins of the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvahs, you have the Ramban's arguments against the Rambam's rules. So the Rambam sets what his Hikshashot Mitzvahs are, and the Ramban complains about a bunch of them, takes a bunch out, and in fact, in the end of the Sefer Mitzvahs, if you're going to take, if there are 630 Mitzvahs, and you tell, you know, you say 40 Mitzvahs of the Rambam shouldn't be counted as Mitzvahs, so what do you have to do? You have to then add in what you think are Mitzvahs. So at the end, the Ramban then says, oh, by the way, and these are the Mitzvahs that, you know, I took out, I'm going to replace them with these Mitzvahs. So you also makes comments and argues along the way with the Rambam's Shurashim, with the Rambam's rules. So the Ramban picks up on this in his comments on the side here, right? This is a Sefer Mitzvah, so this is the middle, and the Ramban is talking here on the side. So the Ramban here on the side picks up on that and says that that's not the Pashup Shot, that's not the simple explanation. Rather, the simple explanation seems to be what one gets from the Gemara, but not quite. I mean, what is the actual mitzvah? The actual mitzvah is, don't argue on the things that Korach argued on. That's the mitzvah. Don't be like Korach and his people in terms of claiming that Aaron's not really the real kahuna, making other complaints against kahuna and things like that. That's what the Issur D'oraisa is. But the general prohibition against disputes, yeah, that's not a good thing, and it might be that we can learn those things out from other areas of the Torah, but that's not going to be one of the 613 mitzvah, at least not as learned out from here. So that's the machlokus between the Rambam and the Ramban. Now, the Rambam is this idea that you're not going to get this, rather you're going to get Tsaras. He's not speaking out of thin air. That's also coming from an earlier source. That's coming from, I believe, the Medrash Tanhuma. That's coming from the Medrash Tanhuma that he says that. So that's part of what the Ramban argues on. He says, why are you quoting that Medrash as being the simple explanation? Really, the simple explanation is be like the Gemara. The Gemara clearly says that it's about perpetuating dispute. The Ramban just simply says, I'm limiting the disputes that one would violate this prohibition with. But the simpler explanation is that. Not that it's talking about what punishment you're going to get and no commandment is being given, as the Ramban claims, but rather it's, as the Ramban claims, it is a prohibition in being like Korach and perpetuating those same disputes that the Ramban perpetuated. So the Torah Tamima comes along and makes an interesting point here. He says, I'll bring a proof that maybe that even according to the Gemara in Maseches Sanhedrin, even that is probably paskening like the Rambam. Because what did the Rambam say? What did the Gemara say here? The Gemara says, don't be like Dasan and Avira, that Moshe got up and argued with Dasan and Aviram, and therefore you have to avoid Machlokas. Rav comes along and says, all who are Machzik Machlokas, you violate a prohibition. As it says, don't be like Korach. And Rav Ashi Amar, Roy Litzdareya. It's such a bad thing that you are Roy to get Tsaras, and we see a proof that there's a Tsaras connection to this pasuk. So when Rav Ashi says that, is he arguing on the previous opinion, or is he maintaining the original opinion? Right? Is Rav Ashi saying that that not only it's hard to figure out what the machlokas would be exactly, but it seems like he is extending the previous opinion, that he's saying that you violate this din, and what do you get for that? You get Tsaras, right? As opposed to what Korach got, you're going to get Tsaras. That's his pshat, and the Torah Tamima says, and that fits very nicely into what the Rambam said. So the Rambam, you can even make a case that the Gemara itself seems to fit with the Rambam, and he says, and I'll bring you another proof that seems to fit as well, and that comes from a Gemara Maseches Bava Basra, where there's a machlokas about dividing the land. The Gemara there says is distinguishing between that when Yeshua divided the land of Eretz Yisrael versus when it's going to be divided up in the future, and it says that in the future Eretz Yisrael will be divided up into 13 sections, and originally it was only divided up into 12. Okay, the Gemara then later on gets into who gets the 13th section. But then it also says, "V'lo nischalka ela bekesef." It was divided through money. What does that mean? Shneamar bein rav lema'at, whether a lot or whether a little, between greater and lesser. So compensation will be paid for the difference between the greater and lesser values. I mean, if you get an area of land and it's not as valuable as other areas of land, so you are entitled to compensation. I mean, it wasn't that the land themselves were all equal. This is debated, and this is whatever. At least according to this Gemara, it wasn't that all of the Shvatim got equal land. They got a section of land. That section of land then came along the evaluators and the the appraisers, and they figured out what the values of the land were. And if you were off, then they balanced it out. If you got a very valuable piece of land, you had to pay. And if you didn't get a valuable piece of land, you didn't have to pay. However, and then Rabbi Yehuda adds in, I'm a Rabbi Yehuda, Sa'ab Yehuda Shava Chameshin Begalil, says that a son, Yehuda, is worth five amounts in the Galil. That is worth more in the south, more than north. That's because of the high tech that was forming in the south. It was the Silicon Valley of Israel at the time. So therefore, it's much more valuable to be in Yehuda's land than to be up in the Galil. Right? So that is clear. So the Rashbam here just makes a comment. He says, by the way, Rabbi Yehuda is not arguing. Rabbi Yehuda Omer. The fact that it says Amar Rav Yehuda. Wait a second. I'm sorry, even better. Yes. So the Torah points out that the Rashbam here says, from the fact that it says Amar Rav Yehuda as opposed to Rav Yehuda Omer, that's an indicator that Rav Yehuda's not arguing. So that, well, it's a very, you know, that's a pretty far thing as far afield. That is a very important, so it's a very important principle. I don't know, yeah, I got to check out if people disagree or agree and how that carries out throughout the Gemara, but all of a sudden the Rashbam jumps in and says that any time it says Amar first, it's not a machlokas. And any time it says the name first, he's arguing. So keep that in mind as you go through your Gemara Shirim going forward. Okay, that's the Rashbam's principle. So here, what does it say in our Gemara in Sanhedrin? It says Rav Ashi Amar. Rav Ashi Amar means that he is arguing or agreeing?
Arguing.
So what's he coming along and saying, says the Torah Tamima? You think it's only a violation of perpetuating dispute, your violent pursuits. No. What we're learning out from our pasuk is that rather than just a regular prohibition, you're going to get saras for doing what Korach did. It's coming to tell you, it's not telling you about the prohibition as much as it's telling you about the punishment, which fits very nicely within the Gemara. And in fact, the Torah Tamima then adds in and says, oh, and by the way, if you have Machlokas Rav and Rav Ashi, who do you paskin like when you have a Machlokas Rav and Rav Ashi? You know?
Rav.
Why do you think you paskin like Rav? Who lived before whom? Chronologically, who lived before whom? Rav or Rav Ashi? What? Rav was much earlier, right? Rav is almost at a Tana status. He's right on the border between from Tanaim and Tamaraim. In fact, sometimes the Gemara comments Rav Tana Upalik. Rav had the right to argue on Tanaim. Rav was a Talmud of Rav Chiya. Rav Chiya was a Talmud of Rav Yehuda Anasi. So he's way up there. Rav Ashi is the last. He was one of the writers. Ravina and Ravashi are known as those who are the compilers of the Gemara. So when you have a chluk between an early Amora and a late Amora, who do we paskin like?
Well, if it's the same, we go by his later publishings, right? But if it's the same Amora.
If it's the same person, we'll go by later. Good. Later. What about if you have a later Amora versus an earlier Amora?
I would say the earlier.
You're probably wrong. Yes. We have a rule called Halacha Kibasra. I know it's counterintuitive, but we have a law. I gave a share in this recently on the Monday night share. A couple months ago. All right, there's a rule called Halacha Kibasra that we follow the later opinions when they're arguing on earlier opinion, and there's a lot of details on when that fits in. But the classic case is assuming the later opinion knew about an earlier opinion, we pass it like the later opinion, because the assumption is that assuming he has the right to an opinion, he knew the earlier opinion and disagreed it. And clearly in the Gemara, when it's written this way, especially if Rav Ashi is the one who wrote it, Rav Ashi clearly knew Rav's position, and he's disagreeing with Rav's position, and therefore we would say Halacha Kibasra, we would follow the later opinion. So that's why the Torah Tamima suggests that maybe that would be a source for the Rambam's position over the Ramban's position. Okay? So that's interesting idea number one. Then we have a few minutes left for some other things. So so when it comes to this, where what kind of standing does this have? The idea of not perpetuating disputes and things like that. So I do have a friend. I think the first friend of mine that I use. A couple of years older than me, but my first friend of mine to actually publish a book was Rabbi Daniel Feldman. Have you come across the name? I think he spoke here at Kol Yom Rishon a couple of years ago. What? Mentioned him before. So he has a first at least thing in English that he published is entitled The Right and the Good, Halacha and Human Relations, where he discusses in the introduction that there's not so much the thing, people just assume, just be nice to people and you fulfill all the mitzvahs of Menotim L'chaver, you'll be okay. So there are actually halachos to that. So he has chapters about nicknames of people, is that appropriate, inappropriate, the halachos of greetings, the halachos of aggressiveness and insensitivity, loving and hating, etc. So one of the chapters that he has, chapter four, is all's fair in love and peace, instigating and perpetuating disputes. Instigating and perpetuating disputes. So, over the course of that chapter, he has a section where he discusses there overriding prohibitions for the sake of shalom. So there are a couple of things, just to give a couple of examples shortly, that one that we have the right to override isurim, that there are actually things that we might violate even in order to preserve shalom. So one example that he gives is actually quoted in the Sefer Chafetz Chaim here, and that is the idea of there's a Yerushalmi in the beginning of Maseches Peah where it says that it's permissible to spread lashon hara in order to avoid disputes, in order to bring about shalom. Now, what would be the case where that would come up? So in Hilchos lashon hara in the Sefer Chafetz Chaim, Lashon Hara, Fal Ches, Halacha Ches, so he says the following thing. It says, V'da, demashi yish omrim demutter lesaper Lashon Hara al Balei Machlokes. That which is said that is permissible to spread Lashon Hara al Balei Machlokes, but that tells you that is in the Yerushalmi and Maseches Peah. Dafka imhu roesh al yidei shi'igal liftei hanashim es godel tarmisam bezeh ha'inyan, v'yir she'ina din imam mitoch zeh teshubach ha'machlokes, aval b'lav hachi ein shim chiluk adam. He says, First of all, it only helps if by revealing it you will actually resolve the dispute, right? So if it's not going to work, you're just perpetuating the dispute. But if by somehow revealing some kind of information about somebody you will end the dispute, so then that would be helpful. So you could plug that into the Virginia governor situation as you see fit. What?
Lashon Hara.
So the Gemara, it's the Yerushalmi says that you're allowed to spread Lashon Hara in order to end the dispute. So okay, well that's a pretty shocking statement, right? So the Chafetz Chaim in Hilchos Lashon Hara says, okay, let's throw some cold water on that Yerushalmi. He says, number one, you have to make sure it's going to work. Now you'll never sure that it's going to work, but at least it has to be fit that you're going to work. And then he throws in a couple of other rules that are on top. He says, number one, it has to be something you know yourself. Right? A lot of these will correspond to the rules of when it's permitted to say Lashon Hara in order for someone's toelis, in order to help somebody, etc. So, number one, you have to make sure it's going to work. Number two, that you have to know, or that's really rule zero. Number one, then, is Shadvarim, that you have to know it yourself. Number two, that you have to have in mind being fully lishma. Number three, that if you have the ability to solve the machlokas in another way, you have to do it that way, and you would be prohibited to say lashon hara. And you need Sarah Shikol Gas Gadol, etc., etc., etc. So that's one idea that you have to make sure that you're doing this well. Another area, anybody can think of another area where we might violate a halacha in order to preserve shalom? There's one very famous that appears in a couple of places. Very good, very good. The Gemara makes a couple of points that by Masecha Sota, by a Sota, Hashem's name is erased in order to potentially preserve harmony within the home. So it says, you see how the importance of raising, of maintaining shalom means that one would even be willing, be permitted, or perhaps even commanded to erase Hashem's name. Now that is, so how does that work? I mean, just on a halachic level, how does that work? So there's two perspectives that one could take in trying to figure out how that works. Number one is that that's the rule of Ase Docha Lo Tase, right? That you have a conflict of two mitzvos, and we'll say that the only way to preserve shalom, which might be what's going on here as well, you have a prohibition of saying Lashon Hara, and you have a mitzvah of preserving peace. So what happens when you have a conflict between an Ase and a Lo Tase? So that we have a rule, ase docha lo tase, right? The positive overrides the negative, provided that you have no other way of doing the positive without violating the negative, right? So that was the Chafetz Chaim's rule, right? Assuming that this is the only way it's going to work, so that's when that would apply. Number two, then we might apply in this halacha as well, that there's a prohibition of erasing Hashem's name. You have a positive mitzvah of preserving peace. In order to preserve peace, you're allowed to erase Hashem's name. That's one perspective. The other perspective is that the details, the prohibition of erasing Hashem's name, is when the purpose is to erase Hashem's name. But if there is an ulterior purpose to it, so then it's no longer a violation of erasing Hashem's name. Right? So those are two different ways of understanding. Is it like a classic Asi Docha Lo Tase, and just plug it into that rule? Or is it a unique idea within the prohibition of erasing Hashem's name? And perhaps a third one that is very famous is the Rambam at the end of Hilchos Chanukah. Famous Rambam at the end of Hilchos Chanukah. What is the famous Rambam at the end of Hilchos Chanukah? That if it's Friday night of Chanukah and you have one candle or a few candles and you have the ability to either light Shabbos candles and you have the right to light Chanukah candles, which one should you do?
Shabbos
candles. because Shabbos candles will preserve Shalom, well, that's not the purpose of it. In fact, Shabbos candles would even override Kiddush, which is more striking because lighting of Shabbos candles is hard to say exactly what the mitzvah is of lighting Shabbos candles, while by Kiddush is clearly a mitzvah asev, zachor yom Shabbos lakacha. So you see that the positive aspect of Shabbos candles, whose purpose is to bring Shalom within the house, is overriding some of these other things. There's some other examples that it brings as well, interesting ideas of where one would daven, that perhaps even those that suggest that maybe if davening in a minyan or a certain minyan is going to lead to machlokes, so it might be best to even not daven with a minyan rather than to go to a place where that machlokes is. So there are actually a lot, but I remember Rabbi Rakefet once talking about this, that there are many claims that people could have of, oh, I'll have better kavanah at home, or davening with a minyan leads to these types of things, therefore I'm not going to go to shul, etc. So he points out that people who use that excuse, generally it's a you problem, not a minion problem. It should be a way to resolve that issue without saying, well, I'm staying home and I'm not going to shul ever and ever. But on the books, officially, there are halachas that it is better to daven at home than go to shul if a couple of parameters are met. And I would just conclude with a... As the mission that we mentioned earlier, that machlokas haroyelis kayim versus machlokas she'ena royelis kayim, right? What's an example of a machlokas l'shem shemayim is the machlokas between Shammai and Hillel, machlokas l'shol l'shem shemayim is Korach v'Adaso, and there's the No Devi Huda in the first tshuva in Yoredeya and Maduri Kama has some kind of dispute about shochtim that are going after it with one another. They're this arguing this one is no good, the other arguing that one's no good. And he gives whatever advice he gives over the course of the tshuva, and he says, oh, and by the way, that the idea that there could be machlokas Hashem Shemayim, such an idea doesn't exist for Zman Hazeh anymore. That we don't have them anymore. Just carte blanche. He just says that at the end of the tshuva. So how does that fit in terms of machlokasim that exist in halacha and things like that? So I'm not sure. I'm not sure how literally he means that, but he does say it. I mean, that's something to keep in mind as one gets into disputes and sometimes finds themselves in machlokasim. So being able to always check oneself to ensure that one is not being like Korach, but rather attempting to avoid the pitfalls of Korach. Okay. Pick up with something tomorrow. Good day.